Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Thursday, a minute past the hour of 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. At least live, that is. You know the drill. Things rerun, things get podcasted. You guys are on your own clock. And I like it that way. I love the new media. I love a kind of media where people don't have to tune in because some suit says, you know, thou shalt tune in at 7 or else. This is 21st century media. Tune in when you want to. And we're glad you do, in your thousands and thousands. We are so very glad that you do. Great show from Guy James today. Lovely little rerun there from Mark Levine on a sort of a little mini vacation. Shush, 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 Mark Levine. And if you come back with a broken leg, well, don't say we didn't warn you. But, you know, it's early April. There's not that much shushing left to be shushed. So enjoy, Mark. Enjoy. Fascinating conversation rolling along in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room right now. The suspension of Randy Rhodes being, of course, scintillating fodder for folks who are good at putting their ideas into type. Jump in and participate if you want to. If you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, this is a wonderful time for you to have a go at it. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room. Registration is easy, easy, easy. And the chat room is free, 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 free. Just like the brand spanking new fora there. We have a number of fora. Various fora for each forum for each individual show, and the latest threads pop up when you go to the forum as well. All part of the interactive, multimedia, total sensory experience that is America's liberal voice. And again, it's free. Enjoy, please. So, I don't want to do the Randy thing again. She got suspended. She had it coming, okay? I mean, once that video went around the internets a couple of times, don't you think that the lawyers at Air America were going, Jesus, what did she do? Because, see, here's a little secret. It's really, really, really hard for a public figure to sue someone who says something rotten about them. For instance, if I say that John McCain is a half-insane, addle-pated booby, that's okay. He's a public figure. And I can back up my assertion by virtue of the fact that he wants to stay in Iraq for 100 years and would like to get us going in Iran. I can say that because his chief financial advisor is Phil Graham, who was the granddaddy of a whole bunch of this evil Wall Street garbage that we're mucking through now. So I'm pretty well protected. There's a line of cases. It starts with New York Times versus Sullivan, and it goes through Falwell versus Hustler. And it sets a standard for when a public figure may sue for libel, slander, defamation, that kind of thing. And just to make a long story short, the standard is actual malice, and actual malice is a jury question. And like I said, I can well imagine that the lawyers at Air America were going, got an ugly case of the turtle squirts. The minute they saw the video, she called her what? Because, you see, it's obvious from watching Randy's shtick in that video that she was acting with actual malice toward Hillary Clinton. And I imagine a whole lot of juries would look at that and go, yeah, that's pretty daggum malicious. Not sort of malicious, not constructively malicious, but actively and actually malicious. Give me the verdict form. Mrs. Clinton, how much money would you like, says juror number one. And poor little struggling Air America, tottering along as best it can. Next thing you know, one little smart-ass comment from Randy Rhodes, and Air America is a former liberal radio network. Hence, I think that probably has a little bit to do with her suspension, yesterday and today? Today, it was announced today. So, if you guys want to talk about that, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N. That's toll-free. We'll pay the freight if you need us to. If you've got one of those unlimited long-distance dialing plans, you can save us a nickel or a buck. We are, after all, listener-supported. And you can dial 304-658-3333. And we will be more than happy to hear from you. You know, me and that mouse in my pocket. Agnes isn't back here. Don't get your hopes up. I love a good conversation. But this is about standards. The Randy thing is about standards. And liberal talk radio got started on the premise that we could have some fun and we could play. But we could do it better and more intelligently than the right-wing hate-mongers like Glenn Beck, who, back when Elizabeth Edwards announced the return of her cancer, went on the air and declared that John Edwards was prostituting his wife and her disease. We can do better than that. Or so we thought. And so that's the nature of the debate. Let me throw another one toward you. Because I believe in standards. And when I catch myself doing something that I don't approve of, I actually kind of sit and do the sackcloth and ashes thing. There are nights that the show ends and I just want to go curl up in a fetal ball in the corner and suck my thumb. Because I actually am concerned about what this program and what this network means, says, and does. And toward that end, I take those concerns and I apply them not just to me and not just to the folks on the network, as far as my opinion is concerned, but to the liberal movement, the progressive movement, whatever you want to call it, to our side of the fight. Now, I've had criticism from liberals saying, you're name-calling. You're just being like them. And I've tended to respond by saying, listen, when they come at you with knives, you can't very well fend them off with a rousing chorus of kumbaya. But there's a line between malice and stirring, striking commentary. And Randy Rhodes crossed it, in my opinion. Let me tell you somebody else who crossed it. I think this is an even more glaring example. There is no one out there, I will say, beyond any and I will brook no dissent on this, there is no one out there, with the possible exception of a parent of a soldier who's there, there's no one out there who wants the Iraqi-pation to end yesterday than me. I'm just rock solid on that. It just is. Because it's so utterly evil, the Iraqi-pation, so hopelessly wrong, so wrong-headedly stupid, that to be anything but foursquare for an end to it is to just be hopelessly misguided. And among those people who have loudly and persistently called for an end to the war and the Iraqi-pation is an organization that you're all familiar with called Code Pink. And I have praised Code Pink up one wall and down the other. But they, too, at least in my opinion, have crossed a line. On April Fool's Day, and yes, I know what April Fool's Day means, the group put out a bogus announcement that the U.S. Marine Corps Recruiting Center in Berkeley was caving into the pressure of weekly protests and leaving town. This was tasteless. The release quoted, the release put forward fake quotes that were put in the mouth of the landlord of the property, a person named Sasha Shamazad. Quote, fake. The situation was becoming untenable. The presence of the Marines sparking daily protests have had a negative impact on local businesses. The city has been forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in police overtime, and some groups have been calling for a national boycott of our city. So I sat down with representatives of the Marines, and we worked out a solution. It was, of course, a lie. And there was nothing in the release to suggest that it was anything but offered as straight fact. Do you remember when George Bush went to that Washington Correspondents' Dinner shortly after he had started his war on the people of Iraq? Do you remember the video they showed of him crawling around on the floor like some hopeless damn drunk and muttering into the camera, "Hey, well, no weapons of mass destruction here," and looking under the sofa, I don't seem to see any weapons of mass destruction here, when already the bodies were beginning, the blasted, burnt, blown apart bodies were already beginning to come home to funerals that of which he attended none. You remember that? Do you remember how we responded to it? And I don't know of a liberal or a Democrat out there that said, "Oh, shucks, he's just funning. I mean, this was a lighthearted little evening when we, you know, when he was getting together with the Washington Press Corps and everybody knew it was in good fun. Oh, shucks." I can't recall anybody defending that heartlessly cruel, vicious little piece of satire, because anyone with a half of a moral center understood that that piece of viciously cruel satire was being perpetrated at the expense of mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, cousins, sons, and daughters who were grieving their hearts out. But Code Pink pulled this stunt And I'm not going to sit and give it a pass. We've got to have credibility. We've got to have the facts behind us. We have got to attack with the facts. Code Pink, on the other hand, responded by saying, "In Code Pink, we tend to have a sense of humor. We tend to joke about a lot of things. It keeps us going when other anti-war groups have gone by the wayside." That was Medea Benjamin, someone I have respected, and for whom my respect has been diminished. Not the kind of thing you joke about. Marine Recruiting Center leaving Berkeley, agreement reached with landlord, city, and protesters. Where's the ha-ha in that? Where's the funny part, Medea? Where's the aw shucks knee slapper? What you've done is tarnished what credibility you had, and you've taken some of the credibility with the rest of the anti-war movement with you. Gunnery Sergeant Pauline Franklin with the Marine Corps Recruiting Command in Washington, D.C., did go ahead and verify that there were no plans to relocate the Berkeley office. And see, I don't have any problems with protesting that office. I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. I'm particularly galled, among other things, and I've got a story in the stack that I hope we'll get to either tonight or tomorrow night about where America's war dead are coming from. And if you haven't seen it already, I think you'll be more horrified than usual. But this crap from Code Pink doesn't help. I have stood behind them in their civil disobedience at hearings in the Capitol. I have stood behind them four square with their open protests on roadsides. I have encouraged people to support them. I have encouraged people to stand with them. I have encouraged people to literally go and pick up a sign and join them. And then they turn around and do something utterly gut-busting stupid like this. Now, and again, please bear in mind, nobody appreciates satire more than I. Nobody appreciates parody more than I. There was some street theater in the capital of West Virginia on April Fool's Day. John Fox talked about it extensively on his program. It was called Fossil Fool's Day, with awards given to our governor and the biggest coal magnate in the state. And there were people dressed up in costumes, and there was an awards ceremony, and it was good political theater. Because anybody looking at it could tell what its center was and where it was coming from. And fossil fools were given out all over the country on April 1st. And it was sharp. And it did what satire and parody are supposed to do, and that is to have a bit of a bite to it. But there was nothing fundamentally untrue. Nothing was represented as true that was openly false. Unlike this shenanigan from Code Pink. Berkeley Mayor Tom Bates, and you know, he's no raging conservative, said the publicity stunt had people calling his office and others in the city. I mean, this was a guy who initially supported giving Code Pink a permit fee waiver and a free parking space at the Marine Center for their weekly protests. Even he said, I think they have hurt their credibility with this farce. Medea Benjamin, however, disagreed, saying, we do believe in putting out some positive ideas of what we want to see and what better way to do it than April Fool's Day. We've got a topsy-turvy world, and if more people get out and joined us, this wouldn't be an April Fool's joke. It would be reality. The Marines would be gone from Berkeley. The war would be over. There would be impeachment of Bush and Cheney, and we'd be upholding our Constitution. She just doesn't get it. There is satire, and there is outright lie. When you do satire, it has to be recognizable as such in order to be good satire. But the point is, I don't believe that we should I don't think that we are well served by letting things like effing whore go by the boards and pretend that it doesn't happen. How many times on how many different liberal talk programs have you heard about something that Bush has done and heard the commentator say, or the host, whatever you want to call him, or her, say, boy, if Bill Clinton had done that, can you imagine the outcry that we would have had from the professional media? Can you imagine the absolute hissy that the Republicans would have had if a Democrat had done something like that? And it's true. So how do we not apply the same standard? Can you imagine if a pro-war group had done something like that? Like what Code Pink did, only in reverse? What if a pro-war group came out and dummied up a news release saying the White House had just privately announced that thermonuclear missiles were on their way to Iran? How funny would that be? How much satire would there be in that? What if Rush Limbaugh got on the air and called Hillary Clinton a whore? Or, to be fair, what if he got on the air? Oh, wait a minute, he has. Barack the Magic Negro. We didn't like that, did we? A lot of us wrote to his sponsors, complained to the FCC, wrote Congress people, senators. Because it was vile and filthy and uncalled for. Just this week, Chris Matthews made the following comment. No, wait a minute. I've got the audio here. Let's do this. Talking about Barack Obama and the whole bowling thing. Listen to this.
Here's a guy trying to break into the white ethnic voting crowd. So he goes and plays a sport most associated, I think, with regular folks in the big cities and small towns. And you and I grew up doing a little bowling. Yeah, We know what a pathetic...
Okay. Regular folk are, by definition, in Chris Matthews' world, white folk. I mean... Go back. Check it out.
Here's a guy trying to break into the white ethnic voting crowd. So he goes and plays a sport most associated, I think, with regular folks in the big cities and small towns. And you and I grew up doing a little bowling. Yeah, we know what a pathetic score is. And neither of us have ever done a 37, I think it's fair to say.
Well, to be fair to Barack, it was over 7 frames, okay?
Okay.
But that still isn't much. I mean... He definitely needs some bowling lessons. He should do what we used to do in Pittsburgh, which is all-night bowling for a dollar, you know, really work on your game. I think he did get Franco Harris, and he did get Jerome Bettis the bus to endorse him, and he's traveling around on the bus with the bus. But...
Now, that is how Barack Obama wound up in a bowling alley. Because, among other things, and Jerome Bettis, even if you're not a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, even if you're not a football fan, you kind of got to recognize what a decent human being Jerome Bettis is. And oddly enough, in the progress through his life in which he became a profoundly inspiring running back, became, because there was a real progress in his life, he was also on his way to becoming one of the best amateur bowlers in the country. So if Jerome Bettis, the bus, has gotten on your bus and you happen to be Barack Obama, I got a feeling that you're going to go bowling. And it's not because you're going to try to connect with the regular people who are by definition white. It's because Jerome Bettis really likes bowling. And you know what? Between those two, they stay at it long enough, and he'll make a scratch bowler. Jerome Bettis will make a scratch bowler out of Barack Obama. You watch. Of course, the other thing kind of blew my mind watching the video. Barack was he bowling left-handed? Left-handed bowlers, left-handed golfers, and left-handed fencers. It just kind of makes my head go, because everything looks backwards, but... Oh, my God! Barack Obama is left-handed! He'll turn our country over to the communists, all Jesus. See, that's parody. That's satire. You can obviously and easily tell that I don't really mean that Barack Obama will turn our country over to the communists. On the other hand, there's the real, live, honest-to-Jesus... inherent racism of Chris Matthews and the crowded in MSNBC. Let's continue.
If you can't do something like that, you shouldn't do it. He should have stuck to shooting hoops.
Yeah, I know.
Which he's very, very good at, by the way.
He should have stuck to shooting hoops, which he's very good at. Just go ahead and say it, boys. It'd be a lot easier that way, wouldn't it?
Way, and which translates racially too, especially during the NCAA basketball tournament. Don't do something you've never tried.
Oh, it translates nicely during the NCAA basketball tournament, you know, for those voters. Geeky white guys. Is there no end to the comedy that they afford us?
Before in front of a national television audience, okay?
You know, Michelle, this gets very ethnic, but the fact that he's good at basketball doesn't surprise anybody, but the fact
that... Oh! This gets very ethnic, but the fact that he's good at basketball doesn't surprise anybody. Well, you know why. They all good at basketball. You know how it is. Lordy. It's just a miracle that Chris Matthews hasn't made a fried chicken or watermelon comment yet. But don't give up! Because he will! He cannot make it all the way to the Democratic Convention without really, really sticking his foot in his mouth and then wedging the other one in there with it. And then once that's all done, he crams it all up his butt. Oh, but nobody's surprised. You know, that's the thing. Nobody's surprised that Chris Matthews is an unapologetic racist. And I'm sitting here decrying Chris Matthews' BS. Because it is. Because it's hateful. Because it's the same filthy racial code that has surreptitiously, and sometimes not so, pervaded our culture for centuries. And here it is, the 21st century, when we all thought we'd be living the George Jetson life by now. And Chris Matthews is still perpetuating racial stereotypes. Really kind of pitiful, isn't it? So, you know, that's where we're operating. And if we are going to continue to be able to levy criticism at the likes of Chris Matthews, at the Don Imuses of the world and their nappy-headed hoes, then you know what? We've got to be willing to criticize the excesses and the vileness when it flows out from our own side. And in this case, that means Randy Rhodes and Code Pink. It just does. So if you want to talk about that kind of thing, you're more than welcome to do so. Or we can talk about a host of other issues. Stuff that has an ugly way of actually mattering. And we've got some insane stuff, too. Now, this I take not to be an April Fool's joke. The Associated Press reporting, I think yesterday, that Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean says the party is committed to seating Florida's delegates at this summer's convention. And that he met yesterday with Florida lawmakers to discuss ways of allocating delegates among Democratic presidential candidates, Obama and Clinton. The quote from Howard Dean says the party is committed to making sure that we do everything in our power to seat a delegation from Florida. That is hopeful. Because it's almost like this primary campaign has been run, and I'm not talking about the candidates themselves, but more the process. This campaign has been run with one foot in a bucket, because of the way that Florida and Michigan were handled. Let's see. Got a call here. Let's go to the phones.
Hello.
Hi, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm well. I had this so disgusted with these people on TV. What upsets me is that I guess a lot of people around the world who see them think that they represent people over here, and we're not like that. Those people are in a different world. I'm talking about Chris Matthews and so forth.
I can't figure him to save me. Any fool could know that when you start to, you know, that, and that's why he knew it. He prefaced it, well, we're getting into some pretty ethnic stuff here, but nobody's surprised that Barack Obama can play basketball. The hell does that mean?
I don't know.
I mean, is it because he's tall? Not that tall. I mean, I've stood next to the man. He's maybe 3-4 inches taller than me. I'm 6'2". Okay, so he's 6'4", 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's certainly not NBA material.
No.
So it's not because he's tall. It's because and all the little racists and all the little Republicans that like to tune into Matthews understand that what Chris Matthews is reminding you is he's black.
And
he's afraid we're going to forget.
A lot of black people can do bowling very well, too. They can.
Sure.
People can do anything they want to do. I mean,
if they want to and they work at it,
right.
You know, It's like saying there are no, you know, only Asians can play ping pong because they're, uh-huh. you know, they're short and they're closer to the table. Oh!
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to, you know, growl at you. I'm not. I'm not growling at you. It just makes me a little bit nuts.
I was, the thing that, it just makes me angry, like even after 9/11, you know, they get on, oh, the people in the United States are scared to death, scared to death. Well, we're supposed to have a big deal Christian in the White House, aren't we? And according to how I see it, that's one of the biggest sins is not trusting God, you know, having being scared to death all the time. And it made me angry that they would say something like that. That doesn't represent us. We weren't going around. We were trying to do the best we could with the situation. You know, it's just, I'm just so tired of them assuming that everybody here is exactly the same or whatever category they're fitted into. And, I mean, believe me, I know what it's like, and I'm sure maybe you do too, but, like, people assume if you have a southern accent that you're an ignoramus or you're a redneck or you're whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're an individual.
And let's make sure that we are work the other side of the street too, Juanita. If you're you know, you're a southerner and somebody walks up and goes you know, I think I'd like to order me one of those grit things.
Yeah.
I want a grit there. What's the thing? Come on. I mean, it's just us. Let's just what's the first thing that goes through your mind? Oh, Jesus, a Yankee.
I've never heard it put that way.
Or just, you know, Yankees. Oh, yeah.
I lived in New York City for a while, and they serve grits up there.
I know. I'm painting with a broad brush here, but it,
yeah, I know.
I mean, I remember the first time I ever heard a Chicago accent was a kid who moved to our town in Alabama from Chicago. And the first few times I heard him speak, it was like hearing fingernails on a chalkboard.
Oh, yeah?
Because it was just so alien.
Uh-huh.
But in time, you know, I went off to the Midwest to college, and I heard that accent a lot. And I fell in love with Upper Midwest accents. And I fell in love with language in general. I love the sound of a Boston dialect or
yeah.
the various and sundry dialects that you find all over the boroughs of New York City.
Yeah, I love accents too.
Chicago and Milwaukee, and you know, I watched a clip of Jesse Ventura last night, and I just love the music of his dialect.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, the first time, you know, it's the fundamental human response to hearing something different, Juanita.
Mm-hmm. There's a few things like that are kind of great on me is like Bush's accent, and I hear that in my voice sometimes too. It's kind of like somebody chewing tobacco or dipping snuff.
Well, you know what, you know why I object to Bush's accent?
It's phony.
Because it's phony.
Yeah.
He's not, and ask any Texan who's paying attention. Heaven mm-hmm. knows, we've had Texas listeners call and confirm, among others, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has confirmed, we don't claim him. He's not a real Texan. He's a phony Texan. He's a rhinestone cowboy. And the funny thing is, nobody wants to claim him now, because the Texans say, hey, wait a minute, he was born in Connecticut, come on.
Mm-hmm.
And the Connecticut people say, yeah, but he moved away real quick. He's not from here either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the man without a country at this point.
What about Jeb? Jeb does have an accent.
No, that's because Jeb is the smart one. Jeb got some training along the way in public speaking and things like that. That's why when he runs for president in 2012,
mm-hmm.
he's going to be billed as the smart Bush.
Oh, yeah. The most. He'll be even more dangerous than McCain.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. If McCain. See, early on, I thought McCain had been put in as a sort of a cipher, a placeholder. The dummy, the chump that would be put in to lose the election, because it was my conviction, and it still halfway holds for me, that the Republicans would just as soon not win this election. That they, you know, with everything going to hell, that they want to be able to blame the Democrats for the failure of Iraq, even though George failed it up plenty good before he will have left. They want to blame Democrats for the economy, just like they blamed Jimmy Carter for the economic disasters that were put in motion and brought about by Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford.
Right.
They want to blame the Democratic president for everything so that, in the grand scheme of Bush's, so that in 2012, against an incumbent Democrat that they have pasted and that the media has willingly gone along with pasting, they can run Jebby Bush, hope for the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I said McCain is talking now about choosing his vice president. That should be interesting to see who...
The short list has got to be Huckabee, Romney, Condi. And Condi, I'd say, would have an inside track simply because she's already been vetted time and time and time again for the National Security Advisor, for Secretary of State, so that they know that there's nothing out there that would prevent her from serving as his vice president. I wouldn't be surprised that if you were to get a sneak peek, at his vice presidential list, it would be suicided. It would be Condi, 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 Condi.
Yeah. What about who's the guy that's always with him? Not Lieberman, but the one from Carolina.
Oh, Lindsey, Luscious Lindsey Graham.
Graham. Uh-huh.
Lindsey's a little too gay. Lindsey is a closeted gay man in the United States Senate, and that will not play.
I remember him well during the
Clinton hearings?
Impeachment hearings, yeah. I listened to all that junk, and at first I thought, well, he's a pretty good speaker, but boy, could he lie. He could really lie.
Yeah, and see, the closet door would open on Lindsey and bats would fly out. So, you know, I think that would stop Luscious Lindsey from getting the nod.
Well, what about have you heard anything about a paper being released that Bush authorized the Tartars? There's a actual paper.
I've got that story in the stack. I think it certainly points a finger at him. But the question is, will the media actually do anything about it? And I'm guessing about 10.
I'm so sick of this media.
Yeah, but I am too, Juanita.
So-called media.
Yeah, well, the laughably professional media.
Uh-huh.
But the fact of the matter is, you listen to the Horn. And for people out there who listen to the Horn, who listen to Nova M, who listen to, you know, for its obvious shortcomings, Air America, there's a chance you're going to hear about this stuff. Like, if you listen to Tom Hartman, you're going to hear about this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But if all you do is come home at night and turn on the local news and crack open a beer and just try to make the previous day's disasters go away, and then, you know, you're only watching the news because it's on, and you're only watching it because it's on until American Idol comes on, and that's what you're really down for, you're not going to hear about any of this. You're not, and you're probably going to be inclined to say, oh, screw it, you know, he authorized torture, he's almost gone, let him go, just, you know, let him go. Because you're worried about making your next month's mortgage payment, and that's torture enough for you. You know what I mean,
yeah.
Juanita?
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. I just got notice today my car insurance went up $40 a month.
A month? $40 a month? $480 a year? What did you do?
It's
run
more
over
than that now.
I, no, but it went up $40 a month. That's $480 a year.
That's right.
What did you do? Run over? What did you do? Run over a nun?
Well, I did run into somebody, but I wasn't ticketed or anything. Oh dear.
Yeah, and you know, car insurance.
It doesn't have to be anything that you did either.
No.
You know, just it, like they raised our our homeowner's insurance, and I'm sure you've heard guys talk about it.
Yeah, and in many states, you can have your...
I didn't even file a claim.
You can. Well, that's the thing. In many states, you can now have your insurance premiums jacked up based on nothing more than a negative tick on your credit history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you look at your policy, it tells you that. It tells what...
Yeah, so if you're 2 days late with your power bill, your car insurance company can jack up your rates. Tell me how that makes any sense.
It doesn't.
Where's the Congress on this? Nowhere in sight.
That's the whole thing. And I tell you, this insurance, honestly, to goodness, it drives me nutty sometimes.
Well, car insurance is such a scam anyway, Juanita.
It's all get to be a scam. Don't you think?
I mean, I said one. Yeah, it is. But I think when somebody has a funeral and they've paid, you know, $100,000 over the course of a lifetime to a car insurance company, the car insurance company should be at least forced to put up a placard saying what a great guy the decedent was, because he paid us $100,000 and we didn't have to do a damn thing to get it. What a guy!
Yeah.
Sorry, you know.
That's the truth.
I mean, I remember when George Carlin used to say that florists were the biggest frauds on earth, because it was the only product in the world that you bought, you took it home, and it died, and you didn't complain. Florists. He said, George Carlin said florists were the biggest frauds on earth, because you buy it, you take it home, the flowers die, and you don't complain. It's insurance. It's insurance, Juanita. You pay and you pay and you pay, and if it's a little fender bender, you don't file a claim. You just live with the bent fender, because you don't want to let the insurance company know that somebody hurt you, because they'll raise your rates even though it wasn't your fault. So I'll just eat the dent. Oh, what a con.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been going on for years and years, too.
Well, do you remember when Sputnik went up?
Uh-huh.
You know, the first satellite.
Yeah.
The Russians put it up, and America had a collective hissy.
The
communists are putting things in orbit. Oh, my Jesus. You know what one of the first things that followed Sputnik was?
The dog?
No. Enterprising insurance agents running all over America selling satellite insurance.
Oh, really?
I kid you not. Little door-to-door insurance salesmen for, you know, little relatively cheap policies would sell you an insurance policy in case Sputnik should come crashing to the earth and go through the roof of your house and kill you.
Yeah.
And people bought it.
God.
Oh, what a racket. And, you know, the origins of insurance are not that bad a thing. Insurance...
It could be a really good thing.
Well, no, insurance's origins lay in a coffee house in London. And it was Lloyd's Coffee House. You ever heard of Lloyd's of London?
Oh, yeah, Lloyd's of London.
Mm-hmm. Lloyd had a coffee house in London. And shipping people who were involved in the shipping trade... Because the shipping trade was an uncertain thing, you know, you're dealing with an era of sail-powered craft and storms and hostile natives and wars and piracy, and so they would get together and they would buy shares in the cargoes, and they would thereby spread the risk of the individual ship's passage among a number of people. And they would, and that evolved into the situation where if the ship didn't come home, it got paid off, and that's the birth of insurance. But that's not what happens anymore. Insurance, by virtue of the deregulators of the Republican Party, has been nothing more than a very, very inelegant, obvious, in-your-face income redistribution scheme from the wage earners to the wage takers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
I'm not lecturing. Please, I hope you don't think I'm lecturing. I'm not.
No, that's fine. It's interesting. You know, like, if you have to purchase an automobile, you might get afford the payments, but then you got to worry about the daggum insurance.
And there are people in this country who... because of driving records, because they missed the power payment last month, yada, yada, yada. There are people in this country whose insurance payments monthly are more expensive than their car payments.
That's right, especially if you've got a new vehicle or even a semi-new one.
Yeah. And most states in this country will not allow you to sue your insurance company except under very, very limited circumstances, and the person complaining has a tremendous burden of proof in order to prevail against an insurance company. You want to talk about welfare? You want to talk about tort reform? I tell you what, we can tort reform by taking away all the institutional protections that insurance companies have.
Right.
But then they cry, "Oh God, we can't write insurance in Florida. We can't write insurance in West Virginia."
You have a lot of people, you know, regular people that believe all that stuff. That it's the people who sue, it's their fault. The people who have a
right. It's the little old lady. It's the little old lady who poured the coffee who spilled the coffee. It's her fault.
And a lot of people say, "Oh well, if we could cut down on all these lawsuits, it'd be cheaper." No, it wouldn't.
Right. It would. The legislature of the state of West Virginia, which is ostensibly Democratic, and the governor of the state of West Virginia screwed the people of West Virginia on insurance by taking away their right to sue somebody else's insurance company when somebody else's, you know, the third party, you know, the guy rear-ends you, and then his insurance company the fiddles around and finagles around and tries to make you suffer so that you'll settle for a lower amount. Well, the Democrats in the legislature and the Democratic governor here set it up so that you can't sue that insurance company if they're dragging their heels.
Wow.
Thanks. And you know what their excuse was? Well, it'll bring down insurance rates in West Virginia. Guess what, Juanita?
Sure.
Guess what? Didn't happen.
It probably went up.
Ultimately, it did.
Right down here.
Because, see, insurance companies are liars. That's what they do professionally.
Yeah.
They lie. And they make up excuses not to pay their claims. Because they got to be filthy rich insurance companies, not by paying claims, but by trying not to. I don't know why people can't figure that out. You know, all that, you know, you're in good hands, like a good neighbor, blah, we can. And Geico has a cute little lizard, and you're supposed to feel good about Geico because of that lizard.
I think that was the Allstate was the one that, in Florida, I don't know if they've taken that away again, that they couldn't write any new policies in Florida.
They chose not to, or they were barred by law?
Tallahassee government, you know, the state of Florida, that I forget what it was. I think they were overcharging people. And I don't know if they've lifted that ban or not.
Oh, Lord.
And I think they were saying something about the other one, too, the State Farm.
Well, see, I call it Snake Farm and All Snake. Because, you know, that's what they are. Juanita, good to hear from you, dear.
You too, Bob.
All right.
And listen, Bob.
Yeah?
You're marvelous.
Oh, okay. You sycophant, you.
Okay.
Thanks, Juanita.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, there's Juanita. You're marvelous. Oh. Oh, God. 7 minutes before the hour. Story. News story. A non-funny news story. A disturbing news story. A news story that could only happen in Bushmerica. You know, I mentioned on Monday that it was that time of year that there was absolute proof that spring had sprung, because we're back to playing our national pastime again. You know, baseball. Or as the Japanese refer to it, bizuburu. Baseball is back. The stands are filling. The hitters are hitting, the pitchers are pitching. And outside the stadium on Monday, where George Bush was being lustily booed, the surveillance teams from the SS were surveilling. Most particularly, Mark Butler got surveilled The new national stadium has an exterior fence, the left field gate, and Mark Butler was standing outside it, and he was watching some of the historic event at a distance. This from TV station WUSA. He's from Minnesota, Mark Butler, and he had his digital camera there. He was going to get a couple of snaps. And that's when the uniform division of the SS accosted him. Nine News Now is apparently what WUSA calls its news team. And they had a photographer by the name of Greg Guise there. And he was rolling tape when an SS officer went up to Mark Butler and demanded, in the name of Jesus and the flag, that the man delete the photographs that he had taken. No, really. Wish I was kidding. I'm not. He claimed that they showed the security checkpoint set up. You cannot have a photograph of the security checkpoint set up of our dear leader and savior George W. Bush. We are the uniformed SS and we demand you delete the photograph. How do these people go home at night and sleep through the night? I don't know. We're protecting America. We are. Well, you can't let him in here. He'll see everything. He'll see the checkpoints. He'll see the big board. SS spokesman Malcolm Wiley told Nine News Now, quote, there is no hard and fast rule in the situation. That it's left to the discretion of the officer. Oh, dear. The discretion of the officer. Delete that photo, citizen. So then the WUSA Channel 9 reporter asked SS spokesman Malcolm Wiley about the legality of ordering a citizen of the United States to delete pictures. Wiley responded, and this really, when the first time I saw this, this sent little shivers up my spine. Quote, we have the authority to ask them to remove the pictures from the camera. That's our legal authority. Interestingly, a legal expert has stated that he knows of no law in these circumstances that would allow law enforcement to force someone to delete a photograph. Kindly to be deleting photograph from camera. Citizen. Tovarich, you're not allowed to photograph security checkpoints. You will now be deleting photographs. You see, it's not great big things that make our freedoms go away. It's little bitty things. Because you know what? Mark Butler, he's a guy from Minnesota who's in Washington, D.C., and he's standing outside the fence of Nationals Park. And George Bush is in there getting booed, and he's just taking some pictures. But now, because the Constitution has been trampled, killed, murdered by the death of 1,000 tiny cuts, a preening, power-mad SS officer can demand that he delete his photographs. This is America in 2008. This is 21st century America, in which you, citizen, are no longer innocent until proven guilty. The burden of your innocence rests upon you. And Mark Butler, what's he going to do? Say, arrest me? Where the hell are they going to take him? Since it's not a crime in the first place, what are they going to charge him with? Where's he going to go? Who will ever hear from Mark Butler again? That is the American dilemma. That is the question of how we deal with this kind of stuff. Because while we talk about, well, you know, he should have told him to, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the whole camera and you can cram it up your butt. That's a lot of bravery that most of us don't have, and I'm not saying, I probably don't have it either. Oh, I'll defend my constitutional right. No, citizen, you'll delete the damn pictures because you don't know what this thug will do to you. You don't know what they'll do to your wife, your children, your mother, your father, because this, citizen, is Bushmerica, and no one is safe. And guess what? It's not going to get any safer if the McCain did it, gets elected. Take a little break and come back. Chime right in with your phone calls if you want to. 877-443-2366 is the number. 304-658-3333. This is America's liberal, listener-supported voice. This is The Horn. When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Cold or cold.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
My, how times change. I don't know. I wonder if Paul Simon has thought of maybe re-recording that wonderful, wonderful song to reflect modern technology. Mama, don't take my memory card. Mama, don't take my memory card. Mama, don't take my memory card away. I gotta stop singing. I'm sorry. I know it's hard to tolerate, but it's sort of hard to... You ever heard one of those things where some pretentious actor reads some singer's lyrics as poetry? It doesn't work. I remember an entire album once, and what I wouldn't give to get my hands on it. It was called Sebastian Cabot. You remember Mr. French, right? Sebastian Cabot, actor, reads Bob Dylan, poet. And all I can remember from it was his Sebastian Cabot's version of Like a Rolling Stone, in which he said, "How does it feel? Huh? How does it feel to be on your own, like a Rolling Stone?" That's as much as. But I can tell you that boots of Spanish leather reduced me to paroxysms of just insane giggling. Oh, yeah, that's a classic for the ages. Right up there with Mrs. Miller's Greatest Hits and the Ethel Merman Disco album. Whew. Good stuff out there. Or, for that matter, you know, William Shatner doing the dramatic reading of Rocket Man. There's another classic. We'll go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Oh, God. I wonder if that cop at the Washington Nationals had God with us on his belt buckle.
You know, nothing surprises me. Now that the Air Force has changed its motto to above all, you know, Uber alles.
Oh, yeah. Gut Wind und... Yes, my German's a little rusty.
Yeah, got me uns.
Yes. Oh, man. I mean, well, he should have confiscated probably like half of the people in the stadium's cameras because, you know, they still allow cameras in the stadium, right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite little moments when all the people in the stadium are using their flashes that are good for 4 feet to take a picture of something 500 yards away. I always get a grin out of that.
And they also have movie cameras on there, too, so, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Remember, this wasn't a D.C. cop. This was the uniformed arm of the S.S.
Oh, okay.
I mean, these guys have the power to disappear you.
Yeah. Well.
You know, remember this is stuff that we really should sort of keep in the back of our minds.
We have to.
When the habeas corpus gutting was passed, I was the only one who noticed that one little provision in there that said one could be held without access of habeas corpus pending proof of citizenship.
That's ridiculous.
And there was nothing in there to state legally what constituted proof of citizenship or what a reasonable time would be in which to prove citizenship. So that means they can take an American citizen off the streets, hold him without a charge, because after all, remember, this man was told to delete his photographs, even though there's no law stating that he has to.
Mm-hmm.
He can be held without charge pending his satisfactory proof that he's a citizen.
That is ridiculous, man. It's like 1930s Germany here, and it's been like that for a while.
And getting worse
by the minute. It's absolutely ridiculous, and the entire globe sees it. I'm wondering when the rest of the world is going to come to our rescue. I mean,
the rest of the world is giggling. Nobody's rescuing us.
They need to stop giggling and come help us.
No, I'll tell you the honest truth. The ones that aren't giggling are grieving. And for the most part, They're all sitting there because, look, I mean, consider who we are. We've got a lot of problems, but we are one mighty big carcass to be feasted on. And they're waiting. Yeah. They're waiting for the collapse, and they're going to carve us up like a Christmas goose.
Yeah, that's, maybe that's the that's why they're waiting. But oh man, it's just it, I don't know. We need help. We need something. But as far as I wanted to comment a little bit on the Randy Rhoads thing,
sure.
I watched the video probably about the day after it happened, the day after it was filmed and it was up on Randy's site. And when she said the things that she said, I was like, ooh. Even though, in, you know, I think some of the way she was saying it, she was meaning like a political whore, and she could have came out a little bit better. You know, she could have chose a couple of different words to describe that, but it was like an Andrew Dice Clay, you know, that or whatever.
Now, see, I hadn't thought about Andrew Dice Clay in absolutely years, and there you go. You put it in the back of my brain again. Yeah, thanks a million.
He was trying to mimic an Andrew Dice Clay routine, and it came off bad, and, you know, should she have been suspended for it? Yeah. Do I like it? No. But, hey, we hold ourselves to a higher standard, and...
And that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, as you were playing the clips of Chris Matthews and all of them earlier, and their, you know, innuendos towards their racist comments and all the little snide remarks they were making about Obama's bowling and all this other crap.
And, you know, look, you know, I mean...
They get away with it time and time again.
Rush Limbaugh, Barack the Magic Negro.
Yeah. They get away with it, you know.
And you know, that if you go and you listen to that filthy piece of racist garbage that Limbaugh put out there, it's a real two-for-one bargain, too. Because at the same time that he is disparaging... via this alleged parody by Paul Shanklin, Barack Obama, he also gets a dig in at Al Sharpton. If you've ever heard, I've played it, because at the end he's got the whole thing is done stylistically. It sounds it's Al Sharpton's voice singing the lyric. Okay, it's this Paul Shanklin creep. Imitating Al Sharpton, he's an impressionist, and it's sung through a bullhorn, okay. And at the end, he's got Al Sharpton coming all unglued, saying, "If Barack gets to be the president, what's gonna happen to me? I ain't gonna get no more buffets. Where's my buffet gonna come from? I've been working it so hard. I've been working for. Where's my buffet?"
Oh God. Well. You know, there's always a double standard. When it comes to racism and, you know, hurling racial epithets or innuendos, there's always a double standard, you know, as far as the mainstream media goes. But...
I mean, you know, Imus, rightfully so, got tossed out on his butt. Of course, he's back now. For the Rutgers basketball comments, and they were filthy, and he deserved it.
For the Nappy Headed Hole comment. Yeah, but look, it's like, you know, when Imus got tossed out, I knew he would be back soon. It's like, you know, that's not a surprise. And
they came back. The radio people came back to Imus like a dog returning to its vomit.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, we can forgive Imus, you know, he just had a slip of the tongue, blah, blah, blah. All right, let's move on. Nothing to see here, folks. But, and he got, what, didn't he? He come back and he got a bigger contract than he had, didn't he?
I think he made out better. Good work if you can get it.
Exactly. Oh, man. But.
And so, you know, it's Imus, it's Rush, and I do, like I'm the official Board of Standards and Practices, obviously, I'm not. But I have very definite ideas about how I think we ought to go about attacking the right. And I do mean attacking. But you can attack without using things like effing whore.
Yes.
And you can attack the right without having to attack your own side. But you know what? Our own side is fair game when our own side screws up. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, yeah. that's true. And like I said, when I heard it and she came to that part, and I was like, whoa. And I was surprised nothing, you know, there wasn't a lash back, you know, there wasn't a backlash sooner than it happened now or whatever. I thought it was going to be like that week following. But I was like, whoa.
Well, what had happened, though, is the Hillary supporters had already walked away from Randy a long time before. Because, see, she's been hate Hillary 3 hours a day for about 6 months now. Or at least three. Yeah.
Well, I'm not a Hillary supporter myself.
Nor am I.
I got to be honest. And, you know, I'm leaning towards Obama because, you know, it's almost like the lesser of two evils. But it's like Hillary has been pimping herself out. And, you know,
and she's doing some dumb stuff. The lame attempts at humor. Yeah.
Yeah, but who's the guy Hillary had a meeting with?
Oh, Richard Mellon Scaife?
Yes. Now, this guy was trying to tear down the Clintons for how long?
9-10 years.
And now she's having powwows with him?
I know. Look, remember how sleazy we felt when she took money from Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah. It's like, come on. It's like, and I think Randy feels, like Randy says on her show, that she feels kind of betrayed by the Clintons because she spent a lot of hours, a lot of airtime defending them when she was working in Florida, when she was on the radio station WJNO in Florida, and she spent a lot of time defending the Clintons.
Yes, she did.
Supporting them through the Monica Lewinsky thing. And all that, and then she's going to go have a powwow with Scaife? Come on.
But remember,
if that's not pimping yourself out, that's not like selling yourself short so you can get into the White House? Come on.
Well, I can't imagine that she thinks Richard Mellon Scaife is suddenly going to think that she is better than John McCain. And that goes back to something that I've said all along. One of the faults of our side is that we keep thinking that we can get all kumbaya and hold hands and make daisy chains with the right wing while they're sitting there with a knife and a whetstone getting ready to gut us.
Exactly. You know, or you can look at it this way. Well, she's been meeting with Richard Mellon Scaife. Maybe they were on the same team all along.
Yeah, see, I can't go there. That's too much work because... There was too much hell that those people were put through, and I don't think. Yeah, look, how many millions upon millions of dollars did he pump into the Arkansas project?
Well, I don't know.
But by the same token, to use that sort of line of reasoning. Please consider that the attacks on the Clintons provided Randy Rhodes a means by which to fire all her guns, so to speak, at the Republican Congress. See, it was easy during the Clinton administration to be one a liberal talker because there were very few of them, and two the fact that you had a Democrat to defend in the White House against a frothing at the mouth, utterly rabid Republican Congress. That was beautiful. That gave you fodder to go into the day with every time you turned around. On the other hand, if there's a Democrat in the White House and you've got Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress, for somebody who works the side of the street that Randy works, it's going to be a lot harder in 2009 if that's the situation. So it would certainly be far better for her to have McCain in the White House.
Well,
I know it's hard. It's hard to stomach, but
it might be better for McCain. Like Mike Malloy always says, that he said this last night. Mike Malloy said, maybe we should let McCain have it. In a sick, twisted way, maybe let him have it, because I'm going to tell you, in 2009, the bottom's going to fall out of everything. The bottom's going to fall out of the market. If they start bringing the troops home, we're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to finally deal with all of the injuries, the brain traumas, the mental, the PTSD.
And you know how they deal with it? But you know how they deal with it? They ignore it.
Well,
they deal with it the same way they've dealt with it for the last 8 years, and they tell us all along that the reason they can't do anything is because government doesn't work.
Yeah. And if Democrats are in control, that's what they'll definitely say. Government doesn't work. So, but
no,
we'll have a Democrat.
what I was saying earlier, talking to Juanita about the Republicans sort of wanting to mail it in this year, because they want to blame a Democrat for all of their shortcomings.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I think they may still feel that way. You know, McCain was clearly set up as a goat, but the one thing standing in the way of that now, and the Republicans just setting him up and letting him lose, is the fact that the Democrats are doing such a damned fine job of ripping themselves apart.
Yeah, it's true. They are. And the
Republicans might wind up with President McCain in spite of themselves.
Yeah. And hopefully if they do end up with a President McCain, at least we can get some majorities in the House and Senate, some significant majorities. But as long as the Democrats are beating themselves up right now, it's kind of disheartening, because this is supposed to be a cakewalk, and obviously
and the cake apparently has dynamite in it, improvised explosive cake at this point.
I don't know, but did you see the article in Truthout about the housing accord they struck today, Reid and the other Republicans?
If you call it an accord, what they
did.
I talked about that one provision last night on the air that would have protected homeowners, and that accord that they struck, mainly what they did was they struck struggling homeowners over the back of the head with a blunt instrument. The Republicans killed that provision, if I understood the article correctly.
Yeah, they did. And they're going to be sheltering they're going to be bailing out the home builders instead. In the article I read, they said that they're going to be giving them like $4 billion. They allotted $4 billion for the home builders to bail out the home builders.
Mm-hmm.
So at least half finished projects sitting out there. And, you know, it's like, if they just freeze the interest rates at the teaser rate, the banks will just have to, you know, take less of a profit.
Yeah, it's not like we're taking the profits away.
No, they'll just be making the teaser rate profit. Let them make the teaser rate profit, and then you have these homes still on the tax rolls, because when they go into foreclosure or whatever, who's going to have to pick up that? Everybody else who's still able to keep their house.
Mm-hmm.
So your school taxes will go up, and everything else will go up, and it's just going to compound the problem. So they got to find a way to, like, freeze these interest rates or reduce the principal or something, because foreclosures, I mean, when a house goes into foreclosure, then it's like, that's hell on everybody. That's hell on all your neighbors.
Yeah, but I'm in a very cynical place. I honest to God believe that the Republican holding pattern, the Republican end game, is to make sure that this doesn't happen on Bush's watch.
Oh yeah.
And let Bush's chickens come home to roost on a Democratic president.
Exactly. That's what I think too. That's all they're doing. That's what they're doing with the market. That's what the Fed's doing with these bailouts and printing all this money.
And from the market, giving it to these investment bankers. The market, the economy in general, jobs, durable goods, all of that stuff. When all of that crashes at the same time, we're going to have the D word in play, depression.
Yep.
And every Republican from sea to shining sea, from the Canadian border to the Mexican one, is going to be screaming, see, this is what Democrats do to the economy.
Yep.
I mean,
they're already starting to say that now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a...
Field.
Yeah, they are. I've been to a couple of rodeos and a dinner on the ground, and I know how they behave. And you can go back and research what they said about Jimmy Carter then and what they still say about him to this day. Jimmy Carter destroyed the economy. That is the blueprint for what they're going to do with a Democrat if a Democrat gets into the White House.
Exactly. And that's definitely what they'll do. And that's the whole plan. That's why, because I go on to the finance pages and I read some of the blogs on the finance pages, and they're saying, like, the market, why is the market going up or just holding steady when all this bad news is coming out? People are, like, saying, what the heck is going on? And then a lot of people are saying they're just propping it up. They're just propping this market up so that once Bush is out of office, then come January 21st, 2009, it's all going to go to hell.
Yeah.
By that time, all the big movers and shakers will already have their positions in either gold, euros, whatever currency they choose, and we'll be left holding the bag. The taxpayer will be left holding the bag. But they better get out of town, I'll tell you that much.
How's the country going to hold the bag when the bag's got a hole in it? I mean, I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I'm really not.
No, I know. Well, we're still going to be on the hook for it. The average Joe's going to be on the hook for it.
Unless we get really, really serious about really progressive, you know, and I mean old school capital P progressive. I'm not talking about the word that we use to avoid calling ourselves liberal. Old school progressive politics, FDR style.
Yeah.
And you can make the argument historically that FDR didn't necessarily want to do the stuff that he did, but he had to do the stuff that he did because the circumstances forced them on him, and as a consequence, he became a great man.
Yes. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to this country's infrastructure and everything else, a lot of things. And, hey, you're going to borrow money. Put it to good use and put it into the pockets of the American people. You know?
Yeah.
And let them and just try and we got to rebuild it up again because the Republicans sure have broke. But the only thing I'm afraid of is that if there is a depression, I don't think it's going to be like in the 30s because in the 30s, people were able to feed themselves. A lot of people were able to, like, a primarily agrarian economy. And that's not the case this go around.
Well, and so, also in the 30s, remember, yes, it's absolutely true that we had an agrarian economy, but we also had an industrial manufacturing base that was idled by virtue of the financial collapse, but it was capable of being restarted.
Yes.
That's gone now.
That's true.
That's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't even have a manufacturing base. So.
And you know what? The agrarian people knew how to raise a garden. Let's go talk to let's go talk to America and ask them how much of a garden they could grow. I mean, you know, you drive through the McMansion gated communities, some of which are built on swamps, some of which are built on landfills.
Mm-hmm.
And they're built built on, you know, big old houses built with crappy
around here.
Yeah,
yep.
lousy construction standards by fly-by-night contractors, and they are put on lots the size of postage stamps.
Yep.
Where are you going to grow where are you going to grow the potatoes? You know.
Yeah, you're not. And whatever you could grow, you ain't going to have a lot of it. You know, unless you have some kind of collector. But I am afraid that if there is a depression, a serious one, that might turn into an all-out revolution.
There's some stuff out there, and it's easily found. I think if you Google "big die-off,"
mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't some conspiracy theory. It's a put together, honest to goodness theory of social future, and it will verify, it will confirm some of the fears that you just gave voice to. Because the worst place to be when the stuff hits the fan is going to be urban America.
Yep.
Because
that is,
you know, and I've said this for years, because, and it was just stuff that dawned on me when I lived in Atlanta. Our cities are very fragile things. Fragile water supplies, fragile food supply, fragile transportation infrastructure, everything. So you'll see the real misery start there, and then they'll start, and then the people that survive that will head for the country.
Yep.
And it gets ugly there too.
Yeah, and then they'll start butting heads with the people that are in the country, because people will be trying to steal out of their garden. And that's one of my fears, but that's what I see happening if there is a major depression again. That's even if it's even not worse as the 30s, which most people are saying it will be worse than the 30s, but even if it's on the same level as the depression of the 30s, I don't even want to think about it seriously, but you have to, and then you have to wonder what you're going to do if that does happen. So I don't know. Well, Bob, I'm going to get going.
I tell you what, I appreciate your thoughts, and it's good to hear from you. So, you know, two phone calls, and we don't worry about you when you know.
I know. Sorry I didn't call sooner.
That's okay. Good to hear from you, man. Take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Andrew, within sight of the home of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Go read up a little bit. You can find a link to it, in fact, if you go to Joe Bagent's site, B-A-G-E-A-N-T, joebagent.com, I think it redirects you to where his essays are. 9 Billion Little Feet is a fascinating essay, and it'll direct you to some stuff about the big die-off. And when you read it, you're not going to be encouraged. We face a very, very tough future if we don't get serious about it. And hence what I said about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He had to do what he did. He didn't have any choice. Conservative politics had put us in a hole that we couldn't see the top of, and the only hope was to go in the other direction with progressive politics. Because, you see, it's not conservative versus liberal. It's progressive versus regressive. And in this instance, the opposite of conservative is not liberal. The opposite of conservative is progressive, because conservatism is regressive. And so if we get a Democrat in the White House, which I sincerely pray to whatever or nothing might be listening, that person is going to have to put this any notion of bipartisanship aside. That person is going to have to put any notion of reaching across to the vipers on the other side of the aisle aside and ram things through Congress just to save this country. But, you know, that's me, and I'm nuts. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Here, kicking. Thinking that Badgent actually makes the point that this point really doesn't matter anymore. We're heading down the toilet anyway, which is, in my opinion, true but unfortunate.
He does go there. I don't go there with him. Because if it's all over but the shouting, let's just go ahead and start the cannibalism and get it over with.
Okay.
But I don't get to do that. This is Koss, right?
You got it.
That's what I thought. Koss, I don't get to do that because of the fact that I am connected to more than myself. There are, in my home right now, 7 individuals under 23 years of age. if I just say to hell with it, where it's all gone, I'm signing a death warrant on them. And so I have to maintain some sort of optimism that we can change it if we find the magic means by which to do so, and we get the people who are part of the problem out of the way. Let me give you, just by way of a little for instance, over on our new forum at the website, mm-hmm. you will find that our good buddy David from Maine posted in segments video of an appearance by Jesse Ventura on the Larry King Show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he says a lot of stuff that I agree with, outright, unqualified, flat-out agree with him. But he also says some stuff that is patently untrue and a little bit disingenuous. For instance, he says we've got a $9 trillion debt that the Democrats and the Republicans created. Well, that's just not true, Koss. Bill Clinton left office with a $3 trillion surplus that George Bush ran through like a drunken sailor. It was gone by summer of 2001 before the planes ever hit the buildings.
Well, true, but there is still...
Now, they've been complicit in funding the war, and I won't argue about that, and it still pisses me off. But Democrats did not run up a $9 trillion deficit. Democrats spent 8 years in the 90s fixing the mess that Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush handed us.
True, true.
And some of it was done on the backs of poor people, and that too also still pisses me off. I'd like to see a Democratic president say, "Look, we've got a lot of work to do. Nobody goes home. We'll have the sandwiches brought in. But we're going to fix stuff. We're going to fix NAFTA. We're going to fix welfare reform. It's about time we stopped balancing the budget of the United States on the backs of people who are struggling every day of their lives just to see tomorrow."
Oh, I agree. I agree. Personally, I'd like to see us go back to Eisenhower's tax rates, which were also FDR's. You know, if you make over, I believe it was $3 million, everything above that is taxed at 93%. Have a nice day.
Yeah, because who can't get along on $3 million?
Well, I know it's a pittance, but...
Well, you know, you'd probably have to adjust those numbers for present value. Because $3 million did go further in... Eisenhower's day than it does now?
Oh, certainly. But even so, I mean, do you want to tell me that you and your entire family and the horn, everything else you can possibly think of, couldn't fit under a $3 million cap?
How am I ever going to buy the yacht on $3 million?
Well, not your first yacht, your second yacht.
But you've got to pay the crew, and I'm not a Republican. I'm like that Michigan senator's husband, you know. I tip. I'm playing at this point.
He'd pay a living wage, too, rather than importing illegals to run your boat for you.
Right. And that's another thing to remember. The Bush tax cuts are sickening, right?
I think so.
With John McCain, he pours concrete around them.
Oh, yeah.
He makes them permanent, forever.
Last all that long.
That's the question. But, you know, if you're in my place and you have to oppose the idea that it's all done and the party's over and somebody can just turn out the lights... then I can't approach it from the standpoint of, it's all over, we're done for, we're screwed, you know. I can't do that.
Well,
I just can't do that.
We are good and well screwed. It's just, at this point, we have to decide, do we want to get screwed more on the way down or less? And I vote for less. You know? I think I'd like to be let down easily, or as easily as possible.
Have you ever seen a movie from the 90s called Rapa Nui?
Rings a bell for some odd reason.
Jason Scott Lee and a cast of Polynesian folks, and it is an imagination of the end of the Easter Island culture.
Yeah, okay.
I highly recommend it to anybody who is interested in this discussion about things falling apart. There's a scene. Well, and I'm not going to spoil it. I think people would enjoy watching it, but it's hard to watch that without drawing parallels to our own culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've kind of. I think people are missing the boat. It's like a discussion I had with a young lady one time many years ago. And she was fairly bright, relatively. And she was wondering why I was so upset. And I told her a few of the things that I was looking at that were kind of worrying me. And her remark still sticks to me to this day. Well, as long as I can go down to Taco Bell and have a taco, I don't care. And that is the mindset that is killing us. We don't seem to understand. When you do go to the Taco Bell and you can't get a taco, guess what? It's way too late at this point. You know, you can't turn a battleship around on a dime.
No, you can't.
And yet people think that you can't. This.
And it's hard to build walls against avalanches. I get all of that, Cos. I really do.
Yeah, people need to realize, you know, climate change, we're already screwed. You know, it depends on how much more we want to get screwed.
Well, that new statistic that came out, a month or so ago that John and I have talked about some. It is hard to, it's hard to ignore that new statistic, and I don't think it's just fear-mongering. See, the right wing calls people fear-mongers for talking about the hell that they have gotten us into and that we ourselves have gotten us into.
Sure.
But that new statistic that came out that said if we do not go to zero carbon emissions in 50 years, it's over.
Correct.
Now, meanwhile, we've still got politicians and some of them very well-meaning running around talking about carbon trading.
Right. Trade and cap. no, that's not going to work.
No, what we need is cap and cap.
Correct.
Put a cap in carbon.
I mean...
Bust a cap in carbon. How about that? There's a bumper sticker.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still talking to people who keep on saying, oh, you're just an alarmist. This is just another phase. This is normal. This is natural. I go, excuse me. How is anything natural where you're having permafrost that has not defrosted in over 10,000 years and is now defrosting? How is that a natural cycle? What kind of natural cycle are you talking about?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, Cossack, most people don't know what the numbers mean, and I'm not assaulting anybody's intelligence. It's just that the job has not been done of getting it out there. Consider, for instance, that people, well, so what if the temperature rises 5 degrees centigrade in the next 100 years? So what? Well, consider that the last ice age was precipitated by a drop in 5 degrees Celsius or centigrade.
Correct.
These things mean, they look like little numbers, but they mean a whole lot.
Exactly.
And they talk about, you environmental alarmists. You know what? We have fire departments, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And firemen, whether they are volunteers or whether they are paid fire departments, sit around a lot more than they fight fires, right?
Correct.
But we pay for the fire department because we realize that when you've got the fire, you damn sure want somebody who can respond to it, because otherwise the whole neighborhood goes up.
Exactly. Well,
so why are they complaining about so-called environmental alarmists? All we're trying to say is that if we take care of it. And, you know, Jesse Ventura said this about it. He said, look, even if Al Gore and all the environmentalists are wrong, we are still living in a better world if we cut our pollution and our emissions.
Of course. Well, and part of the problem is, and Bob, you'll have to agree with me, because I know we grew up in roughly the same era. And when I was growing up, the whole mantra was, we want to make the rest of the world just like us. We want to make the rest of the world behave just like America. Good God, if that happens, we're going to need five planets to live on. We don't have the resources to live as flagrantly as we do. We can't have, I mean, if China starts trying to live like we do, we're all screwed.
Sure, because the world can't do that. And it's hard to tell America that, you know, our profligate ways are going to be the end of us. Because we feel like it's some sort of God-given right.
Well, you remember the first push that, you know, the American way of life is non-negotiable. Oh, really? Gee.
Yeah, I know.
Tell the Chinese that. Tell the Indians that. You know, they have their economies that are outstripping ours, actually. Shock, surprise.
No kidding. And, you know, what are we, and at the same time, from the other perspective, what are we doing? Well, I'm sorry, China. I'm sorry, India. You guys keep dragging the rickshaws, okay? You don't get cars.
Yeah. That ain't going to work.
But that's the failure of the manufacturers. You know, every night, John Fox is out there, and he is talking about air cars and electric cars and, you know, cars that run on mind power and, you know, everybody, people are thinking about this stuff. Is Detroit? Okay, let me back up. People are thinking about this stuff. The only people that aren't thinking about this stuff is Detroit.
Exactly. And this is exactly what happened in the 70s. We were building bigger and bigger and bigger cars because you can make a bigger profit on each one of those cars. And then when the oil shocks hit, guess what? Detroit wasn't making anything anybody wanted to buy. And the Japanese and the Germans were. And there went our wonderful automobile manufacturing facility. And we never really recovered. And what did we do? We went back to the same model. That's why everybody's got an SUV or a pick-em-up.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you know, we can't get it through our heads.
Ow. I don't think that was me. You still there, Cossack?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. When Barack was in West Virginia and the guy stood up and said, I want to know what you're going to do about these gas prices. He said, well, you know, we need to get out of Iraq. Iraq is a big part of our gas price problem because it's got the Middle East on edge.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Middle East is on edge, historically, gas prices go up. It's just a fact. Deal with it. And he said, we've got to get America back to work, and we've got to invest in green infrastructure, and we've got to yada, yada, yada. And then he looked the dude straight in the eye, and he said, what kind of car do you drive? Guy goes, Cadillac Escalade.
Oh, God.
And Obama just looks at him and kind of shrugs his shoulder and gives him that sort of, what the look? And says, you know, I rest my case. You know, it's what you said a few minutes ago, Cossack. We don't have a birthright to get 3 miles to the gallon going from home to the mall and feeling good about it. Even if you can afford to drive a vehicle that gets 3 miles to the gallon, you don't have a constitutional right to do so. Not yelling at you, just trying to make the point very clearly.
Oh, I know. But we think we do. We have Yes.
Well, of course we think we do. There's 100,000 bajillion million hours of right-wing hate radio every day, and there's Lou Dobbs, and there's O'Reilly on the television, and there's Chris Matthews, and there's on and on and on and on, telling people that they do, that their right to get 3 miles a gallon is right under their right to not ever have anybody say anything ugly about their religion.
Well, and it's not just the right wing. It's part of our society, unfortunately, that we have grown up in a society of excess. Now, our entire history is based on taking whatever the hell we want. We took the goddamn country from the original owners because they had no rights because they were heathens. We want your land. We're going to take your land. We have violated every single treaty we ever made with the Indians. Every single one. You know, we talk about genocide and ethnic cleansing. What the hell do we call what we did to the Indians?
Sure.
It was even more complete than what Hitler did to the Jews of Europe.
Yeah, a lot more, and and it happened on a grander scale. If you go and read the brilliant book that came out 3 years ago or so called 1491, it's a compendium of all the latest and most modern analysis of what these two continents looked like before Columbus. The population density was higher than the population density of Europe, Cossack. And then you've got people coming across the continent saying, well, it was a vast uninhabited wasteland, or a vast uninhabited paradise, or whatever. Well, it was uninhabited because the diseases got to the cultures before the people did.
Correct.
The guy that we know as Squanto from our little elementary history lessons went away and eventually found his way back home. He was kidnapped, and he was taken all over Europe, and he finally gets back, and he goes to where he lived, and he finds out that he is the last of his people because they are all dead from disease.
Yeah.
And that's before the pilgrims landed.
Hey, have you ever read of Henry Hudson's voyages to the New World? The Dutch? I'm not even talking about the English yet.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have.
Bunch of bloody murderers. Thieves, cutthroats, and murderers. And we haven't changed. If you really want to get into an interesting fight, ask anybody in Georgia how their wonderful little state was founded and what it was from its founding. You know what it was, right?
Yeah.
Just like Australia.
Prison colony.
Exactly.
Sure. I got a couple of more lights blinking here, Cossack. I enjoyed the conversation, and, you know, I hope you can understand when I say that. You know what I mean when I say I can't give up, right?
Oh, I know. I'm just looking at the things, and, it bothers me that we're in as dire straits as we are, and people just don't get it. And that's scary. You know.
Yeah,
we do. The ones on the horn, we do. But your average John idiot on the street, he still wants his Cadillac Escalade. He thinks he deserves everything he has, no matter who he has to screw over to get it.
Yeah, I know.
That's what bothers me.
I know. Well, it's none of this is easy to stomach. So,
big darkness.
Soon come. Talk to you later, Cos.
All right, take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, there's a real rouser going in the chat room about the Randy Rhodes thing. I explained very plainly at the beginning of the program what slander per se is. And the fact that she committed it. And as a consequence, I don't take issue with what Air America did, because their lawyers were probably standing on their heads screaming bloody murder. And when the lawyers scream bloody murder at you, even if you run the company, you fail to pay attention at your own peril. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, not much. Just a couple of thoughts. First of all, what hubby and I are dreaming of these days is a bicycle.
All right.
Well, you don't have to put gas in it.
That's true.
Yep. You were talking about how fragile the cities are.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember how long ago this was, but I was reading an article about that. And once the supplies stop, and it kind of makes me wonder if these truckers have any idea how powerful they really are, because most of the cities are supplied by truck. Once the supplies of food stop, you have 24 hours, no more.
Yeah, because the trucks have to roll in constantly.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, and you've seen the movie Men in Black, right?
Yeah.
You know, the part where Tommy Lee Jones explains to Will Smith about the only way people can live their day-to-day lives is to not know that there's always a Zenuvian battle cruiser hovering above the earth.
Yeah.
That the knowledge would kill the civilization.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of the fragility of our urban infrastructure is that way. You can't have people running around if you're trying to maintain civil society. If you got people running around realizing how fragile their city is, it gets a little hard to maintain order. I mean, look, I'm not kidding. There's an actual legal dispute between the state of Georgia and the state of Tennessee over Georgia's claim to the right to put a big pipe in the Tennessee River and drain it for the sake of Atlanta.
Well, I can't tell you how often the state of Oregon has to send off the state of California because they want to stick a pipe in the Columbia River and suck it dry.
So you get it.
Oh, yeah. And everybody in the everybody in this government from the state of Oregon keeps telling California, over our dead body, drain your pools first.
Oh, drain your pools, trade in your Escalade. But what do you want the people who bought the McMansions? Where are they going to raise their gardens?
I don't know, but I do know they can save a lot of water just by not watering their golf courses. If people
yeah, and there's an irony there too, Susan, because if you Scots woman that you are, or Scots heritage that you are, like me, you probably know that golf courses arose as a function of wind and water and sheep on the coastlines of Scotland.
Right.
The bunkers
were all the time.
And right, and the bunkers would form in places where the sheep would stand and eat the earth in a little declivity that protected them from the wind. And they exposed the sandy soil.
Right.
And around that, Scottish sheep herders built a game.
Exactly.
Now we take lowlands, highlands, deserts, for the love of heaven, and understand, I'm a golfer. I love golf. We build golf courses in the desert. You know,
I'll never understand that.
The people in the Persian Gulf. The people in the Persian Gulf build ski slopes in the desert, but we don't have their money.
I don't care if they've got the money or not. It's still insane. It's insane. If people want a real good idea of what happens when a society crumbles, although it's from a different, this is fiction and it's due to a nuclear war, but the effects are more or less the same. Get a book called The Last Babylon by Pat Frank.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Takes place in Florida, of all places. And you get a real good idea of what happens to an American society after a cataclysmic event. And it'll scare the crud out of you. And it's fiction. It's old fiction. The new fiction, which has been updated, will scare you even worse.
I know.
But there is a little bit of hope as far as where to plant the crops. You can plant potatoes in a garbage can. You can plant beans in an area 5 feet square. Google container gardening.
Oh, yeah, there are ways, but I'm not, and that's not the point, Susan. There are ways to do it. But we have a populace that thinks potatoes come from cans, and that green beans come from cans, and that that beef comes from a refrigerator case at the grocery store.
My beef is going to be starting coming from jars that I can.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to start hitting sales and start canning it. Same with everything else I'm going to start.
You know what? I have been grateful to receive because there's an art to it. I had a friend who gave me a jar of canned squirrel. You know what? Yummy. Didn't have any squirrel brains in it, but it was yummy.
That you have to just be careful about how you cook it. Any home canned material.
Oh, sure. You've got to be super duper careful. Because botulism is and see, that's the other thing. We've also got a culture that thinks botulism.
Botulism is something you inject.
Yeah, botulism is something that makes your wrinkles go away.
It'll also kill you.
Yeah.
But it's another thing that people can do to save their own lives. Read the Firefox books. Those you get at the library. Now, you don't actually have to go out and slaughter a hog, but just reading about how it at what time was done.
Yeah. No, I've got the entire set of the Firefox books. In fact, one of my first efforts at brewing, Susan, was as a 14-year-old boy who discovered the apple beer recipe.
Ooh.
It was not good.
I used to have the entire set, but I lost them when I got divorced. And I've never had the money to replace them. Ooh. I'm sure my ex dumped them. There's all sorts of information out there. All you have to do is be willing to learn. Be willing to open your mind up. And be willing to admit, it's going to hit the fan. It's going to hit it big.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who's elected, it's still going to hit the fan.
And the question is, can it be stopped? Now, there are those who say it can't, and, you know, the condemned ate heartily. I can't go there.
No, I don't think it can be stopped, but I think it can be alleviated.
I think it can be, but you've got to have the national will to do it.
Yeah. You absolutely have to have the national will, and you have to have people in the government willing to kick over the traces and say, screw politics, we're going to do what's right for a change. We'll fight about it later.
Yep. Well,
that's what we're going to be needing.
Go read about check out that Bajent essay, 9 Billion Little Feet, and find the link to the big die-off and read up on it.
Oh, I will. After I finish blogging.
Yeah, I know. I know. Susan, take care, dear.
You have a good night and love to Agnes.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, just a little bit of an update. We are sincerely looking at the idea of Agnes coming in to produce during the time that the kids are out of school. She thinks it would be fun, and so do I. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
This is Carla from Clearfield, Utah.
Hey, Carla, how you doing?
I'm fine. I guess my chit-chat for today, two things. One, have you heard about the documentaries that Phil Donahue and the young Iraq veteran Thomas Young is doing?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Mark Levine interviewed Phil Donahue about that film when he was at the Take Back America conference.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. He was on one of the morning alphabet soup stations, whatever Meredith Vieira is on his
Today Show. Yeah, the Today Show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a wonderful person to hear his story, and he's gotten better, and he articulates very well. And I tried going on their webpage. What was it? War. I can't think of the name of the website now. War Wounds or no?
Oh yeah, it's on the I can't get it either.
Body of War.
Body
That's
of War.
What it is. Yeah. Body of War.
I thought Body was in it somewhere.
Yeah, and I couldn't find out any what theaters are, but it might be Landmark Theaters. And Brian Lamb, when he was Phil was on Brian Lamb's show, said that he thought it was a Cuban, Mark Cuban. Does he own Landmark Theaters? I wonder.
Not sure. I mean, he owns a bunch of stuff. He owns the Dallas Mavericks. He owns a high-definition TV network. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'll have to Google that, because I would really like to see it. I've seen parts of it, you know, but have you seen it at all?
No, I have not.
It was on PBS with Bill Moyers about a couple of weeks ago. And then when he was on C-SPAN with Brian Lamb, they showed parts of it, okay? And it's a very moving documentary, especially when they show Thomas taking, you know, showing the amount of drugs that he has to take, and our little happy Congress, both Republican and Democrats, repeated exactly what Bush said, you know, oh, there'll be a mushroom cloud and all of that. And to see it actually repeated back, you know, to you, it is just makes your stomach turn upside down. And the only person that they really showed, well, there was one other senator, but I can't remember his name, but Richard Byrd, Robert Byrd.
Yeah, his senator.
Call for caution and, hey, let's think about this, you know. So, and then, you know, as he's taking, showing the pills that he has to take.
Oh, the right, and by the way, Carl, the right wing is having an absolute hissy over that film.
Oh, I would imagine. Oh, yeah, because it's like Phil Donahue said, you know, it shows the media in a bad light, because he says they could have stopped this. You know, they went right along, lock, stock, and barrel. And anything that's a criticism against the war, the right wing has a hissy fit. But it's something I think should be seen, and especially, you know, on NBC. This is not meant as any disrespect to our veterans, but it, to me, sometimes it seems like they're glorifying these troops that survive, okay, and give them all these medals, but then they don't, and I'm sure that our veterans that are disabled have gone through the same thing, but they don't show them because they don't want to see the actual devastation. So.
No, they don't, well, yeah, I mean, like with the right wing, Carla, you know, they don't love the troops. Why is Phil Donahue? Phil Donahue's doing this because he don't love the troops.
No, he's doing it because he loves the troops.
Yeah, exactly. And one wonders, I see this stuff come out because I get these right-wing hate screeds, and I wonder if the American people are going to, and it's the same with Iran, it's the same, it's all, are the American people going to bite on this again?
Probably so. Hope not. Maybe they'll wake up. Where I go and bank, the lady there has a son that's over in Iraq, someplace northwest of Baghdad, and they told, you know, his group that they were going to come home in July, you know, for their end of their tour, and they're not. They said, well, you may be coming home in December. They also said that they were going to go to another base down south, and they canceled that, so they're staying in place. And they said they don't know what's going on. Morale is bad because they're saying one thing and doing the opposite. Some are saying, well, we want the truth. If we weren't going to home in July, why didn't you say, well, you know, not tell us that it's 95-98% that you're going home in July, saying, well, we don't know for sure. And then other troops, so the morale is really bad, but then other troops are saying, oh, we don't care anymore because we're here for the money now. Because after their 12 months, if they stay over there longer than 12 months, they get $2,000 per month for staying.
How much of a bargain is it, Carla?
Huh?
Not much of a bargain, is it?
No, huh? Because you run the risk, you know, of losing your life for $2,000, you know. And back on Thomas, he has a brother that's over there. I think he's on his second tour. And when Thomas signed up for it, I don't know if you heard this part of the interview, he said, you know, like when he saw Mr. Bush stand up on that pile of garbage and, you know, with the bullhorn, and that inspired him to join up. But while he was in basic training, that's when they got the news that instead of going, and he was signing up because he wanted to fight him in Afghanistan.
Right. Then he finds himself in Iraq.
When he was in basic training, he says, you're not going to Iraq. I mean, Afghanistan. You're going to Iraq. And that's when he said, wait a minute. This is not what I signed up for. This is wrong. Something's not right. And then 5 days after he got there, he got shot in the back and paralyzed from the, you know, his chest down.
Yeah, his mid-chest down. I think, Donahue said from the nipples down.
Yeah, and on his truck there was no protection. And remember the words of a little Happy Rummy? Says you go to war with the army that you have. So they had no preparation, you know, for, and I always thought that's what you make sure your troops are prepared for extended combat. And, you know, no after plan, you know, so. And every time I have to sometimes shut off the news because it's beginning to really bother me, you know, but I still like to keep informed so you can tell the people out there.
Yeah, well, you remember when Dear Leader said that he gets his news through a filter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got to, his filter is the sort of home on the range filter where never is heard a discouraging word. You and me and the rest of us, Carla, we get it through a BS filter.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're watching mainstream media and you're on top of stories and on the ball, then you are by definition filtering out the BS when you watch a Brian Williams or a Chris Matthews or a Katie Couric or Charlie Gibson or any of that crowd. Because most of it is BS, isn't it?
Yes. And it's a pretty sad state of affairs when we can't trust our media anymore, and it's just like old George Orwell said in his book 1984. You know, the truth is being distorted until we actually believe it. But hopefully there's a bunch of us that, you know, will grow in number and be able to stop this stuff, especially if little Happy Cheney gets his way.
Oh, you know? Yeah, I know.
And isn't have you ever noticed that whenever Cheney goes over to the Middle East, or Bush goes over to the Middle East, or Rice goes over to the Middle East, and then now little Happy McSane and Lieberman and Graham go over, and they come back, then something happens in the Middle East. There's some more violence, like the Basra deal.
And, you know, just as an added bit of fun, gas prices go through the roof.
Did you hear what the oil guy said? He says, oh, it's not our fault that the gas prices are going. It's you, the consumer. You guys have just got to stop driving so much. Because if you stop driving so much, then the demand for oil goes down.
Well, that's great if you live in New York,
mm-hmm.
or Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Or anywhere that has a viable public transportation system, which is not most of the country. But you know, I had a conversation last night, John and I did, and I said, you know, because John says things like, well, you know, I'm going to walk down to the shops and get some groceries for dinner. I can't do that. If I walk to the shops, you know, I'll be back by 6 hours from now. And I'll probably collapse on the way home just trying to carry the groceries. That or I'll be hit and squished by a coal truck.
I know. Well, it's just like, when I first started, I first started listening to you a while back, a couple of years, you were talking about the commuter train from your neck of the woods to D.C., and they mm-hmm. wanted to shut it down. Did they shut it down, or is it still running?
It's still running.
Well, that's good.
God knows, not on time, but it's still running.
Well, yeah. Well, out here in the West, we had a nice Amtrak that ran from, well, it started in Salt Lake, or coming from California, but went through Ogden, then up to these little rural towns in Utah, in Idaho, up through Boise and Oregon, and all the way to, I think it ended up in Seattle, past Seattle, maybe Bellingham. But then the little happy powers-to-be, without taking a survey or anything, they just cut out that route. And the times that I rode it to visit my mother in Washington, because I love the train, it was always packed, you know, because those little people that had relatives along, the Utah, Idaho border, they just loved doing that. But they cut it out because they said there wasn't enough traffic. Wouldn't it be nice if they would start it now back up with all the gas prices the way it would be? Because they should have never done away with train travel. I'm old-fashioned.
I'm just a train geek. I love trains.
Mm-hmm.
I love train travel. And you know, if most of America could travel by rail in Europe or Japan, they would come home and they would absolutely beat down the doors of Congress.
Oh,
demanding viable rail in this country. And anybody, I mean, for heaven's sakes, Carla, anybody who's gotten on an airplane lately knows what a miserable experience that is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, the last time I got on an aircraft, I was convinced the darn thing had been purchased by the airline used from Hobbit Airlines. My chin was on my knees. My spinal column was jammed directly down into the back of the seat, and it was awful. I mean, it was miserable. I can't imagine what it would be like to have to. I mean, none of the flights I was on were over an hour.
Yeah.
If I was on one of those for 7 or 8 hours, I'd come apart. I'd come unglued. I mean, you know, they'd have to remove me from the seat at the end of the flight, like one of those Incan mummies they find on the top of the Andes, because I'd just be. I'm sorry, I can't move my joints anymore. I'm a 45-year-old guy.
Oh. Hey, well, I did. What happened with Randy Rhodes? What did she do?
She went out to San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and on a publicity tour event for Air America and for her show and for the local affiliate out there, and opened up her remarks with this tirade in which she repeatedly referred to Hillary Clinton as an effing whore, not just once, and called her a bitch, and, you know, just vile ugliness. And apparently, as of today, Air America suspended her, and that was the last that I heard of it.
Oh, my God. She went over the top. Well, she's been known to do that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure, she has. The thing is, you know, she wasn't on the air, and because she wasn't on the air, I guess she felt more comfortable using the fun words that she doesn't get to use on censored terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm. But still, it's not professional. And I thought she was a Clinton supporter.
Well, she did. You know, back in the '90s when the Republicans were going after her hammer and tongs, she did.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along, see, that's the thing. What I said earlier, Carla, I hold to be true. The Republicans were more than happy to mail in McCain as a sacrificial goat so they could get a president into the Oval Office that they could then blame for everything that Bush has done to America. And the only thing standing between the Republicans getting their way is the Democrats, who are ripping themselves asunder. I was just thinking here, because I was looking at some stuff that had been written in the chat room. To my knowledge, okay, Ed the Mushroom Head Schultz is 3 hours of Hillary hate a day. Randy has come out vociferously toxic toward Hillary. I keep prefacing all of this by saying I am not a Hillary supporter. I'm a Democrat. I'm an American who desperately wants to see things turned around. I want to at least try. We got to go down. If like Susan said and Cossack before her, if we're on the way down, I want to go down fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we have the McCain-Churian candidate in office from 2009 to 2013, we're done. We're done. This is the last chance, Carla. So, I and this network, as far as I can tell, are the only liberal talkers who are saying our goal is defeating John McCain. Our goal is bringing the party together. Our goal is saving America. See, I've been around the track a couple of times, and I realize that in primaries, it's generally better not to back a horse, especially if you're in a position like I'm in. I mean, now to tell you the truth, my two candidates were Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards. They both bailed. I am left with a choice, and I'm one of the last people in the country that has a vote. I'm left with a choice between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to go make that choice in May. And regardless of the outcome. And see, it's hard to get the Barack supporters to say this, and it's hard to get the Hillary supporters to say this, you know, the hardcores, but I will say, and I will encourage people to join me in this, regardless of whom the Democratic nominee is, I will support the Democratic nominee, because I love my country enough to try to save it from John McCain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, I'm the odd man out on that. Guy James, Mark Levine, John Fox, Peter Godbold, we're all the odd men out on this, because The rest of liberal talk has either staked, gone all in for Hillary or gone all in for Barack Obama. I'm all in for beating John McCain.
Yeah, that's what you want to do, And I wish the candidates would realize that themselves and stop this nitpicking mockery, and it's giving Karl Rove more ammunition when he goes out and talks to these sheep followers, the young Republicans, and what he's doing up there is just mocking us. Now he thinks, John McCain and John McCain's Oriental daughter are the best things, in the world, and he's the one that was behind the movement in South Carolina to discredit McCain, saying he fathered a black child.
I remember well.
And I watched a few minutes of that, and I said, oh, my gosh, you Democrat candidates better shut your mouth and unite because you'll bring us down, because you're just giving more food and fodder for Karl Rove and his ilk and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and some of these right-wing congressmen. So anyway.
All right. Carla,
nice
I appreciate
day.
It.
And we'll talk again.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Keep them sane in Utah. You got a tough job.
Huh?
Said, keep them sane in Utah. You've got a tough job.
All righty, thank you.
Thank
bye
you
now. For what you do.
Thank
and
you.
And say hi to Agnes.
I sure will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And moving along. Hi, welcome to the program.
It's new, though. I'm on hold.
Well, Richard, there are other people on hold, too.
I know.
Welcome. This is conversation radio. This is the one place where listeners and conversationalists don't get run.
Well, okay, I'm just kvetching at you.
Okay, I get kvetching.
What?
I said I get kvetching. I understand.
Yeah.
You were spritzing earlier too.
There's one thing that really concerns me is we can focus an awful lot on what's wrong, and there's so much that's wrong. It's an endless source of entertainment, but there's a hypnotic quality to it. It's like we chew our cuds, complain about stuff, and the stuff we're complaining about is real. But what I want to do is focus more on what are we going to do about it, and really come up with some possibilities.
And I agree. I agree with you, Richard. I agree wholeheartedly. But let me put a concept to you, or posit a theorem. We have to reach a certain amount of critical mass before we can do anything about it. We are unfortunately not in a small enough tribe that one person can do something and fix it for everybody else.
Oh no, that's
so we have to create a critical mass of awareness that the problem is real, and that the problem is profound, and that the problem is immediate.
Right. And I think that, though, among us, we have that awareness. And when I say us, of course, I mean, let's say, the established horn listenership. So let me throw a concept out. The Republicans have done a masterful job at framing. Now it's our turn. And let me throw out a term. Mountaintop removal. We gotta change that.
Find a better word for it.
It's village destruction.
Ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. Well, we need to come up with another term, because what mountaintop removal sounds like is, oh, we got this nice little mountain here.
It sounds like they're busting a zit.
Well, yeah. I mean,
look pretty nice
with a haircut.
Yeah. Oddly enough, you're talking about something that's been discussed at length. Among those who fight mountaintop removal, to the point that some of us use a different phrase, and that is mountain range removal, and that has an entirely different meaning, doesn't it?
It does, and it's a good one. But I think that we need terms that capture the destruction of the way of life, the poisoning of communities. And just keep hammering that the way the Republicans do. Look what they did with the word liberal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just by pounding over and over again. It's a tactic they use.
Well, consider what's been done with global warming. We refer to people who say that global warming doesn't exist as a global warming denier. Now, where was that phrase denier first brought into serious usage as a criticism of people who of people who are blatantly just insanely wrong about something?
I don't know. Tell me.
Holocaust deniers.
Oh, that, yeah.
So you know, by that kind of framing, Richard, you come up with a subconscious way of linking two groups of loonies.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. I mean, maybe it's worth the risk. I don't know. I can't say. But I think there are many things that will benefit from being looked at. You know, I look at you're much closer to right wing Christianity where you are than I am.
I'd say that's a fair assessment.
We have Christian bookstores going out of business. I've seen three of them pulled within the last few years in my area. And as a matter of fact, I think that's all of them, you know. We have one.
Must be like living in civilization.
Well, not always, you know. We got our problems. We got our ultra right wing blow baiters on the radio.
Yeah.
We've got fundamentalist Christian radio stations hogging the non commercial end of the FM band. For the rest of you who don't know what that is, the frequencies between 88 and 92 on an FM.
Right, and they were meant to be public access, and they were gobbled up by right-wing religion hucksters.
Yeah, well, most of our public stations are in that range, but the right-wing religion people have been gobbling up, actually been setting up little satellite transmitters here and there.
And that's the way that they perverted that FCC promulgation, was to take those was to get up those frequencies that were meant for public access, and then hook them up to satellite feeds from a single source. That's why that's what provides an outlet for things like the American Family Association radio network and Focus on the Family and all of that filthy garbage.
And we've got something called K-Love, which is a network.
Hey, K-Love, Jesus loves you and we do too.
Yeah,
we'll be back with some great Christian contemporary music right after this message from Bloodthirsty International. Yeah.
I don't even know if they have commercials like that. I mean, I don't listen to it. They're sort of creating interference next to a frequency I want to get. I mean, around here...
Turn them in!
Around here, 100,000 watts radiated power is actually not that much. This is not back like back east. Depending on the landscape, I mean, you're familiar with problems with reception in mountain territory.
Oh, gosh, yes. Gosh, yes. That's
here
why.
It's as bad. It's just sort of spread out.
Well, that's why back when I was on terrestrial radio in Beckley, it was so frustrating. It was great during daylight savings time, because that meant I would have 5,000 watts with which to get my show out until maybe 8 o'clock at night, and I was on from seven to ten.
Oh, so you were on AM radio?
Yeah. The rest of the time, however, I was almost spanning the block at 50 powerful watts.
Yeah, right.
Because they would have, I mean, the nighttime power down. Was literally from 5,000 to 50.
Yes.
Because the FCC was protecting the frequency of a Jesus station out of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes, yes, right. You know, New York City has its own radio station, or did until recently. Giuliani set it free. New York City, I think they set up, it was WNYE, and it still exists. New York Public Radio now, but the city of New York actually ran its own AM and FM radio stations, and the people on the air were civil service employees, and they were rather good. They also I'm sorry, it was WNYC. WNYE was an FM-only operation for the school system. So the city actually ran three over-the-air stations. And the AM station, WNYC...
But see, that's the way it's supposed to be, Richard. I mean, that's that you know, using the bandwidth for the broadest dissemination of the widest possible level of information.
Right, and this was non-commercial.
Right, but you know, of course, like we said, the right wing got hold of it, and there it went. So, but to get back to what you were saying, because I do have to roll to some other callers. Everybody,
yeah,
they do this to me, Richard. Everybody rings in the last half hour of the program, and then I gotta do telephone tap dance.
Yeah.
God knows I love it anyway. But to get back to your original point, I think that you are correct. We've got to talk about real solutions, and you know that's what John Fox does a very good job of. But
well,
I've got to give people an opportunity to say where they think we are, and then we've got to try to think our way out of it, and we've got to build that critical mass.
We've got to roll along. I just want to throw out this concept that we've got a lot of people. See, I not being in your territory. I think about, well, how can we recruit the right-wing fundamentalists, or even a few of them? And I realize it's a huge...
We've gotten, Richard, as many of them as we're going to get. There's a little handful of them that are getting in the environmental movement. A little handful of them. And the rest of them are because of the effectiveness of things like the IRD, the Institute for Religion and Democracy, which made the Baptist Church a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. Now, if you listen to Peter, he's talked about it on a number of occasions. The IRD is after the Methodists, they're after the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, the Episcopalians, anywhere that they can get their tentacles.
IRD, what's that?
Institute for Religion and Democracy. They are a right-wing, wildly well-funded think tank that insinuates its way into various denominations and perverts them to the Republican cause. But to answer your question, we've gotten as many of the fundies as we're going to get. The rest of them are not worth fooling with.
Okay.
Frankly, and oddly enough, the people who know this best of all are the Republicans. Because if they ever, ever, ever did what they promised and eliminated abortion, all of those knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking fundies would go back into their weird little cults and would never come out and vote again. That's why Republicans promise change about abortion, but never do anything to affect it.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yep. But is Rick going to be on tomorrow night?
I don't think he's going to. I don't know. I haven't heard from him. I don't think he is going to do the Friday night gig anymore just because it is such a chore. For him to pull together his weekend show. He has been beset by that person from Porlock, as the saying goes, to the point that it was almost impossible for him to get a show done. In fact, he had said he was just going to give up on it, but we talked about it, and he decided to stay in the fight.
Okay.
So he'll be there on the weekends, but I don't think he's going to be doing the Friday night. Of course, I could be wrong. Yeah. So
there's a few issues I'd love to bring up to him on the air.
Okay. Well, you know, you can always email him, and he'll address him in his weekend show too.
Okay, not the same as the conversation though. It's I mean, there's some things I would appreciate his insight into, you know, a phenomena that I observe, and I just wonder if he's got, you know, I keep thinking, what can we do? How do we chip away at the hypnosis of the Bushistas?
Again, I think some of these people, and you know, he may have a different take. Some of these people you got to write off.
Yeah.
Because working within the context of that metaphor of the die-off, some of these people just have to go away. Sorry, they do.
Should what?
Some of these people just have to go away.
Well, but they're not.
You know, because I mean, look, but I mean, look what happened with look what happened with the civil rights struggle. Who were the people that were most vociferously opposed to civil rights? 50 and up. 45 and up, and now as they've died off, it's a little bit harder to be a racist. And with every generation, it becomes a little harder to be a racist. Same thing's going to happen with gay rights. As the elder bigots die off, it becomes a little bit easier to demand first-class citizenship rights for people who happen to be gay. Same thing's going to happen with environmentalism. Same thing's going to happen with republicanism.
Well, but
and that's one of the things that gives me hope. We have hope for our future because the weirdos who are killing us are a generation that is going away.
The white-haired what?
Yeah, exactly. Richard, I got to roll along. I'm so sorry, but I do.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm, you know, I complained. Other people are complaining. So.
All right. Take care, Richard.
Okay. Bye,
everyone. Bye now. Oh, wrong button. Hi, welcome to the program.
Bob!
Hey!
It's Vince.
Hey, Vince, what's up?
Not much. Wild night tonight, though.
Yeah, it is. It's a little zany. And maybe, you know, some of the folks who aren't in the chat room might not know that, but, I mean, it's been, the fur's been flying in there.
Oh, yeah, it has been. Let me just go on the record as saying I am a rabid Obama supporter, and I will support the Democratic nominee no matter who it is.
Hallelujah. I am sad to say that I'm sad to say, and this is not directed at Obama supporters; it's directed at both sides. I mean, I see a story every day, and maybe it's media manipulation. Okay, I mean, I'm the first one to say that, but every day there's a story of more of, you know, the percentage is rising of people who say that if it's not their candidate, they'll stay home or they'll vote for McCain. Now, I hope
that are just. They're just cutting their nose off to spite their face.
Well, I hope they're just kind of being childish and spoiled. I remember when, okay, how's this for a really weird analogy, Vince? I remember when the Cincinnati Reds, my team, lost to the Baltimore Orioles in the 1970 World Series when they were a lead pipe cinch to win it. You know, big red machine, all of that stuff. And I was so disgusted, I went and got my my baseball cards and the scissors. And my dad looked at me and said, "Are you nuts? Have I raised you that poorly?" Because, you know, I took it seriously, and I was hurt. Hated those damned Orioles. And he said, "Don't do that. Be a man." Yeah, that's what you get when you're seven. Yeah, be a man. I'm seven! But he stopped me, and it was, and I'm glad he did. The cards are gone now; they'd probably be worth a fortune. I had a Pete Rose rookie card. Never mind. Because I'd inherited my collection from an older relative. But anyway, it's the same thing I'm seeing, and I'm hoping that somebody's out there. You know, Mark Levine did a show called "Mommy Daddy Stop Fighting," and with the Obama Clinton thing.
Right.
And I hope some of that will prevail. But it's still scary. It's very scary. But you know what? What scares me is John McCain. I mean, that guy makes me sit up bolt upright at 3 o'clock in the morning with the sweat pouring off my head.
Oh, I mean, yeah, and I mean the thought of having President McCain ought to be enough to scare anybody. I don't like Hillary Clinton. I think I honestly don't think she's going to make a good president, but Jesus God, McCain's going to wreck us.
Yeah.
I mean, Clinton, I mean, NAFTA's not a good thing, and a lot of the things that, you know, I mean, Clinton was an all right president, but a lot of the things he did kind of screwed us over, you know, down the line, and it's probably going to be the same with Hillary Clinton. But, I mean, we can survive a Hillary presidency.
And maybe this shows me for the simpleton that I am or proves that I'm being overly simplistic, Vince, but do you know what the English translation of the word Alito is?
I'm not aware, no.
McCain. You know what the English translation of Scalia is?
What?
McCain. Right now, we have Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas. And none of them are quitting anytime soon. And about half the time, they've got Kennedy on their side. That's five.
That is a point that I'm not hearing raised very much, and maybe it ought to be.
I raise it all the time, Vince. And I beg people to talk about that when they hear somebody say that there's no difference between Obama and Hillary and McCain. That crap drives me up the wall. And I'm not yelling at you.
I know.
John Paul.
My friend's here.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is old. the rest of our liberal so-called, there's really no such thing as a liberal judge, let's understand that. There's just less conservative.
Just by their very nature, have to be.
But John McCain would get to appoint at least one Supreme Court justice. Maybe two. The flukes of human existence being what they are, maybe three, maybe four. We don't know, but we know he gets one. Now, do the math. If you don't like Hillary, Hillary might, and you're absolutely convinced, and it turns out you're absolutely right, Vince. If it turns out you're absolutely right and she's a total screw-up as a president, tell me that she's... Well, first of all, if she's a total screw-up as a president, she'll only screw us up for 4 years. Same with Obama. However...
You get I don't John, know. We said that about Bush.
You get John McCain in the White House, and he's going to give you another Alito. He's going to give you another Scalia. He's going to give you another Roberts. He's going to give you another Thomas. Supreme Court justices screw up America for generations. May I direct your attention to the Dred Scott decision? That was in the 1850s. Justice Taney. We're still suffering from that. How about Union Pacific versus Santa Clara or Santa Clara County versus Union Pacific Railroad? The case that established corporate personhood. That was 1884, Vince. We're still suffering from that.
Not to bring up the whole Randy thing again, but that does remind me of a quote that she had. It was on one of her, you know, little promos for her show. When was the last time you had a mammogram, Amex?
Yeah, she's funny. Yeah, I get that.
I wasn't defending Randy so much as I was making the point that corporate personhood is retarded.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is, and that brings it home very nicely. You know, I thought her comment about, you know, who knew that Geraldine Ferraro was David Duke in drag, I got a giggle out of that. But it's the rest of it. But anyway, beyond that. You know what's really weird for me, Vince? What's really weird for me is to realize that what I thought was just good common sense turns out to be the wildest sort of radicalism, and that is simply saying, I will vote my vote, and then I'll support the Democratic nominee.
Are you familiar of a comic book character by the name of... I can't remember. Oh. Well, whatever. The point I was trying to make was getting in line with the whole common sense thing is one of his catchphrases was always, ooh, my common sense is tingling. which was the point that the comic book writer was making was that common sense, which isn't so common, is almost a trait reserved for superheroes.
Yeah.
In terms of
right up there with X-ray vision and X-ray vision and being able to, you know, stretch a long way or riding a silver surfboard.
Deadpool, that was the name of the character, but I digress.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm stealing that. My common sense is tingling. But you know, you can steal from me too. You can tell somebody who says that if Obama doesn't make it, they're not going to vote for Hillary, or if Hillary make it, whatever. You can tell them that the English translation of Alito is McCain.
I've heard people tell me that there are people out there like that. Me personally, but then again, I'm kind of in an area that's kind of hot for Hillary anyway. But most of the people, even in my local area, you know, the Democrats that we do have down here in southern Georgia, North Florida, i.e. next to none. But anyway, even the Democrats around here, I mean, maybe all hope is not lost in that regard. Because, I mean, even the people I'm talking to, even though they're big Hillary fans, they've all flat out said, you know what, I'm voting for the Democratic candidate. I'd like it to be Hillary, but if it's Obama, then that's who I'm voting for. So maybe all hope is not completely lost there. I mean, I have not heard that sentiment where, well, if it's not Obama or if it's not Hillary, I haven't heard that here.
Well, I hope it's a media creation, but it's hard not to pay attention to, Vince, because, you know, if you go around on the internet, you find this stuff. You'll see it. All you got to do is go look. And the idea of deliberately dividing the Democratic Party when the stakes are higher than they have ever been. You know, in 2004, we said the stakes are higher than they've ever been. In 2000, we said the stakes are higher than they've ever been. And you know what? We were right both times. As we approach the cliff, each succeeding election becomes a little bit more important than the one that preceded it.
Well, I mean, I don't understand how people don't understand how serious the situation is. I don't know if you pay attention to the BBC much, but they had a report out about 3 weeks ago where they were basically, and you know what? I have only heard jack about this in foreign media. I have not heard anything on any United States media about this, which really upsets me. Because I don't think they, you know, all the foreign guys are making it up. But there are already reports, and like I said, the BBC did a story on it like 3 weeks ago, of shanty towns cropping up outside of major U.S. cities where
saw
people
that.
Are living
yeah.
out of.
Yeah, the same thing that we had in the late 20s and early 30s. They were called Hoovervilles.
That's what I said. I got on my blog and I said, you know what? Oh my God, here come the 20s all over again. Except this time, I guess we can call them Bushyvilles. And I mean.
I call him Casa Bush. You know, because he's proud of his Spanish abilities. But please understand, Vince. There's a big difference between the 1920s and early 30s and now, and it's what I said earlier. Back then, we had an idled manufacturing base, but the manufacturing base was still ready to be cranked back up. Back then, we had a more rural population that still knew how to raise a doggone garden. It's all gone.
But you know what's an even more, in my opinion, is an even bigger difference between then and now? Back then, we had a media that functioned, and we had a populace that wasn't didn't have their heads constantly stuck in the sand. I mean. We can talk about politics, and we can talk about the candidates, and we can talk about the issues, left, right, center, up, down, north, south, east, and west. From now until hell freezes over, it's not going to make a lick of difference if there's only, you know, us political nerds out here in the corner talking about it. Unless I can get every other person in this little complex I'm living in talking about it, then I hate to say it, but from my point of view, all we're going to go is in circles and circles. And unfortunately, that circle is hooked to a wheel that's on its way to a cliff. You're absolutely right.
But see, as long as you're dedicated to continuing to talk about it, you raise the likelihood of it happening within that little complex you just mentioned. You know, when I look, it doesn't mean you've got to sit and have a full on debate. When I'm in the grocery store and I see a lady, you know, going, "Holy crap," at the price of a loaf of bread, and I look at her and say, you know, what do you, price, you know, it's easy. You say, boy, prices sure going up, ain't they? Uh-huh. Well, what do you want when you put an oil man in the White House? And you walk away. You don't stand there and fight. You just plant the seed, and you know that water's going to fall on it because she's buying $2 a loaf bread on the way to $4. You know, if you look in her buggy, that she's got some $4 a gallon milk in it. And she's going to look at that sticker because it's laws of primacy and recency. What a person hears first, they remember, and what they hear latest, they remember. And nobody else is going to have anything approaching a conversation with her in the grocery store. And she's going to look at that little cash register receipt, Vince, and she's going to hear me. That's what you get when you put an oil man in the White House. I mean, it's my equivalent of bumper sticker politics.
Just the short, catchy phrase, huh?
Yeah. You know, what do you want with a Republican? You expect it different with a Republican?
God, I couldn't believe these hearings the other day when the guy was like, "No, we need our tax breaks," when I just shelled out probably about $400 or $500 in freaking income tax this year.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Make you crazy. Hey, Vince, I got one more blinker here, buddy. Don't be such a stranger, okay?
Well, you better get doing before you run out of time, man. I don't want to monopolize it.
Yeah, you didn't monopolize at all. Call earlier next time. We'll spread it out some.
All righty. I'll talk to you later, Bob.
Later, Vince. See ya.
You have a great day.
You too. Our buddy Vince. Love hearing from him because it's a take. I love getting the take from folks who aren't old guys like me. And let's try one more. Ah, darn it. Well, I cut Vince off short for no good reason. Sorry. Been all over the place tonight and yet not gone to half the places I'd planned on going. I'm going to get there tomorrow night or bust in the process. Because there's some stuff that I think, it's no big secrets, but beyond what has happened to some radio talker, there's stuff out there that really matters. And I have a feeling that everybody involved in the Randy Rhodes fracas will land on their feet. I mean, it's not going to be, I mean, even if she's been, you know, and we don't know, I mean, if it's suspended or whatever, if she's suspended, she comes back, if she's not, and if it's permanent, she'll wind up somewhere else. And it's not like she's going to be pumping gas down at the Texaco. On the other hand, there's stuff that affects working people, people who have to make every penny count, that deserves discussion every bit as much. So that's the show tonight. Thank you for all your participation. Man, you guys were just wild in the chat room. If you've never been there, go there. It's free, and it is a free exchange of ideas. If you don't have the time or the patience for the chat room, try out the forum. Head on radionetwork.com. You can click on forum. You can click on chat room. During live programs, the chat room's always hopping. And the forum is growing day by day. Do you know somebody who is put off by love fests for one candidate or hate fests for another? Send them here. Because our laser beam, single-minded focus is the defeat of John McCain. That is what matters. And we are terribly in earnest about it. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. We've got a Strictly Confidential fabulous repeat coming up for you. He'll be back on Monday. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. He's got a fundraiser going on, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He needs your help. Because, see, his life was made a little bit more difficult not too long back. And where he had been carrying everything on his own back for a while, he can't do. And he needs your help. So if you value everything that you get on the horn, by definition that means you value Ben Birch and WhiteRoseSociety.org. Do the right thing. Ben won't send you a bill. Thanks, many thanks, to the hardworking folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. By affiliating yourself with Coal River Mountain Watch, you can be a part of the solution. And I don't care where you are in America, guess what? You're downstream from us. Be part of the solution, crmw.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 114, Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch, that's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and we appreciate their support, too. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, February 7th. 2008. So if you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday, that is February the 7th, 2008, that's 9 p.m. Eastern, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate with myself and to our two guests, count them one, two, who I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' websites and the audio from previous shows in case you come across a guest that you would like to hear that you may have missed, those of you who stream via iPod or the archive streams. You'll find it all arranged in a calendar format. It's easy to locate. You'll also find links there to the chat room. That's the Head-On Radio Network chat room, which is active as I speak. You'll find links there to the Head-On Radio Network main site, where you can participate in helping listener-supported progressive radio continue, keeps the stream streaming and the cassettes turning and the CDs spinning and the packets passing. You'll find a PayPal button there. You'll find out about the other progressive programming on the Head-On Radio Network. We have a widely varied schedule, all of them progressive and all of them very proud to be a part of the Head-On Radio Network, which I'm only a very small part of. We have hosts as far away as Australia, and in D.C. and South Florida. I'm in North Florida. We have hosts just spread out all over the place. It's amazing how we managed to pull this off. But all the right people came together at all the right time. It's a magical experience, the thing that the Head-On Radio Network is made of. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and a link there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. To contact the show, you can use 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Those are toll-free lines. If you have unlimited long distance, you should use that to help save the studio a nickel or a buck. We are listener-supported. So if you do have unlimited long distance, please use that. Use area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. And we're glad to pay the freight if you'd like to call toll free, but we welcome your calls on either line. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And I'm so glad, got to tell you, delighted that Bob is back.